This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Zoe, the world's first personal voice companion, enabling Star Trek combadge-like interactions with Twitter, Facebook, Spotify, smart objects, and much, much more. To find out more about Zoe, visit zoe.me/trekfm. That's xowi.me/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Toba Ushi.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated TNG show. I'm Philip Gelfis, sitting in the center chair this week. I'm joined by my happily married co-host, Darren Moser, who is waiting for his wife to get ready before going to a concert in 10 forward. Are you almost ready to go there, Darren?
Oh, I'm almost ready. I'm very excited. I hear that Data is going to combine 2,000 different artists and styles. And some people say it sounds like static. I think it's music to my ears. So we're just ready to slip into our 1980s-esque formal attire and make our way down.
All right. Just be sure you tell Mrs. Dr. Sci-Fi what those leggings are for, because sometimes the 24th century women don't always remember. All right. So I'm also joined by my other co-host, Daniel Prue, who is down on the holodeck preparing for a big date. So how are things looking so far, Daniel?
Oh, fantastic. I obviously have recreated Risa, the most romantic place anybody can think of, and I've brought a backpack full of Horgons with me. So I think I'm going to get lucky tonight for sure.
Okay. So you're not taking any dating holodeck advice from Geordi?
Oh, no. Or Barkley. Or anybody really that is usually dating
Wesley. He tried to make a move.
Oh, he did, didn't he? Wasn't that his first kiss on the holodeck? That's right. Yeah,
that's right. So if you're going for the younger ladies, that might be something to remember. But anyway, today on Earl Grey, we're going to talk about something a little bit different. You know, one of the reasons that we love The Next Generation is because of the characters and that the relationships that the characters have. So for this episode, we're going to examine the romantic relationships of TNG, the ones we enjoyed and the ones we found curious. To begin with, we'll talk about the romance that was revealed in the pilot episode Encounter at Farpoint until its conjugation in Star Trek Nemesis. That's right, William T. Riker and Deanna Troi. Now, Darren and Daniel know that I have a somewhat unique point of view on these two characters and their relationships. I find them both very strange in how they interact with each other, even though I think I appreciate their characters, but they just have a very, to me, very interesting and odd relationship that apparently works for them. And so I'm just going to set up a couple opening comments and then throw it over to through Darren and Daniel here. But I think the interesting thing about Troi and Riker is that they spend 7 to 8 years throwing their respective romances in each other's faces the whole time. And when they are together, they're like sniping at each other. Like, for instance, the episode The Loss, when Troi loses her empathic powers, you have Riker going, you know, I think you enjoyed being in control. That's what gives you the power, doesn't it? And now, I mean, like, this is the, you know, you're talking to your the woman that you apparently love so much like this. And then there was the episode Thine Own Self, when Deanna was taking that bridge, you know, officer promotion course. And, you know, Riker's like, well, you know what? Some people don't have it. I guess you're one of those people that don't have it. And I'm like, he just, like, berates her, which I know it's the whole, you know, he's the first officer and she's the counselor. But, I mean, they're just so sniping at each other the whole time, and yet they go through this whole relationship. So before I just start freaking out, Darren, what are your thoughts about this Imzadi couple?
Oh, it is a very interesting relationship. Also in the fact that it's kind of the only relationship that's presented from the beginning. I mean, yes, very quickly we start to introduce others, but really it's the TNG relationship. I mean, if this was a soap, this would be the long thread of, like you've said, the will they, won't they. I mean, no matter what other relationships surface, this is the one we're all tuning in to find out what happens. And then they start to throw, like, Worf into the mix, because apparently some writer, you know, was maybe looking at some trading cards and they happened to be stacked together. And I don't know. I don't know where that came from. But the Troys, they're a great couple in the regard that by the end, when they've kind of figured out that they're both broken people and they really are the only two that can put up with each other, they have a great wedding, and they let, you know, that wonderful TNG people build a wonderful wedding set. So for that, we thank them. But yeah, it's a pretty complicated conjugation. Let's just put it that way.
All right. Well, Dan, what are your thoughts before we start slicing and dicing into this whole relationship?
Well, I am going to defend it. I actually really enjoy the Troy. That's right. That's a thing now. The Troy-Riker relationship. The Troy-Riker relationship. I've never really done. So, you know, there are things when you watch Star Trek, and you're big super fans like us, you go into Memory Alpha and read the behind the scenes books. And one thing that I've never come across any sort of information is how and why they developed this relationship. I've never really been super that interested in it to try to learn about it. But I would imagine that if I were to look into it, I think their relationship is supposed to be the progressive 24th century relationship. I think maybe that's what they set it up for. Like, you set up that there's this romantic tension between these two characters in the beginning. And then show that they can both love each other and still not be monogamous for the whole series, and then kind of at the end maybe fulfill that. And I think it's done very effectively. I think it's done very well. I actually think it's a super mature relationship. I don't think they're ever throwing each other's conquests, you know, Riker has them all the time, in each other's faces. A lot of times they go to each other for advice when they're, you know, with other romantic partners, I think. And I think that it's a very strong foundation.
The only two quotes I would have is one, and I can't remember if it's Captain's Holiday or which episode, where Riker's like, man, because I think he's talking about Riza. Y'all will probably help me remember. He's like talking about it to, like, there's a group setting, and he's like, yeah, you know, you'll experience a lot of things. You know, I've had a lot of great fun there. And Troy's like, yes, we've heard about those stories. Sometimes too many of them. And then the second one, I was just watching The Vengeance Factor the other day. This is the one, I don't know if everyone will actually remember it, because it's not like one of the better episodes. This is the one where they encounter the warring factions, and it turns out that the assistant to the leader is like 100 years old and is there to like kill the other guy. Anyway, which I'm really not explaining it well. But anyway, so Riker, Yuta, I believe is the young lady's name, who's 100 years old, and Riker have a little thing going on. And so Riker is macking on her pretty hard, I believe is the technical term. And so he gets asked her to cook him dinner, but he ends up having her cook it for him and Deanna in 10 forward. And then so he, and yes, in wow. Yes, in front of Deanna. So like, here, have my ex and I cook me some dinner. This will be our date. And then when they finish, Riker just kind of looks at Deanna and like gives her like the eyes look. And she's like, well, I guess I better hit the old dusty trail. And then...
That's weird. It is weird to us, but I think it's supposed to be I think it's supposed to be like a relationship without real jealousy. It's supposed to be like, wow, I can be in love with this person and they can still be my wingman.
Are you saying Deanna's Will's pimp or something? Or
sometimes you could. I mean, both of them have those situations.
So you know what? I'm not kissing you with a beard, so I'm going to find someone else who will.
Well, we all know that line is absolute BS. It's total nonsense because she kissed him 1,000 times. Anyways, I don't need to harp on this point. I actually like the relationship. I think it works really well. I think if you put it into today's terms, it doesn't make any sense. It does kind of look a little weird. It is definitely odd. I admit it's very strange, but I think it works. I think it's. I think that's kind of how things might be in the future between men and women. It'll be much more much more, less defined, much more shades of gray.
I see what you did there.
Well, I mean, look at the moment when Riker is giving, you know, advice to Wesley, and he's like, how do you talk to women? And he's like, looks around the room. Well, this is the first woman I can see. Oh, it's Guinan. And now I'm going to put the moves on her, so much so that she's going to tell Wesley to shut up. Like, wow. Wow.
I think it was like, maybe we, you know, what character could, would it possibly be the coolest to have say, shut up, Wesley, Guinan? Oh, you could never get Guinan to say, shut up, Wesley. Oh, yeah? Well, you know, the one thing that I thought was
interesting. Tell me more about my eyes.
One thing I thought was interesting, because I feel like I watched it in this order, because, I mean, I know I watched the original series movies first, but, you know, they didn't necessarily stick with me, and so watching The Next Generation. And then I watched the motion picture again. So what is the motion picture set up? Oh, look. It's the first officer of the Enterprise meeting the girl who he was in love with, Ilea. I'm like, why does this seem so familiar? It'll come to me.
Could you say goodbye? No, I could never say goodbye.
I'm like, they just carbon copied the motion picture romance.
Hey, if we don't give her hair, if we give this one hair, no
we'll
one
will just make her
notice.
Differently exotic.
Well, a lot of, you know, the motion picture and The Next Generation were both cut from the same cloth, right? They were both supposed to be phase two projects, essentially. And they were both scrapped and kind of remade. So it makes sense that we get that kind of, like, you know, like similarity between the
two. You know, one thing that makes me also question this relationship, again, you know, Riker's is fine, I guess. And Deanna is fine, too. But, like, Troy throughout the series has horrible taste in men. And I'm like, she's like the jerk in The Price. You know, the guy who was helping, you know, get the money or make the deal for the wormhole. And these guys are just jerks. Jerks. And, you know, and I'm like, what does this say about Will? That these are the men that she's attracted to? Because Will doesn't seem like a total jerk. But I'm like, maybe I need to reassess, you know, the type of men that she's attracted to.
It's because she's got Riker, so she's you know, nobody will ever live up to his standards. I mean, he's the Riker man. So she just kind of, yeah, it's like
his level of beardness.
That's
she
true.
Fell
that's
for him
true.
Before he had his season two beard. I mean, that's if there's not
you know what it is, it's because
love,
of her.
I don't know what it is.
Somewhat inconsistent empathetic powers. I guess you would say
empathic.
Empathic. Thank you. Empathic powers. She could. She was able to see bearded Riker before anybody else was. That's what it is.
Well, like, did you all, you know, throughout the series, and we'll stick with the TV before moving on to the movie. But through the TV series, I mean, do y'all actually think that they would get together? Because I mean, it's sort of this subsumed, you know, romance. Like, was there ever an expectation that you thought, like, oh, they're going to get together? Like, maybe. The one that relationship we're going to talk about next. Or did you just think it was like, oh, they just were exes that just have this weird relationship, but that's pretty much all it is.
I'd say the high point of that would be like Menage a Troy, you know, where, I mean, hey, you see them actually interaction, not in uniform for once. I mean, that's something.
Oh, she definitely was not in uniform in that episode.
But then at the other end of the, you know, the spectrum, you have, you know, you have once they start to introduce the Worf relationship, and it's like, wait, like why even put that in there? And it pushed Riker so far out of the picture, you know, where he's even asking Riker, are you okay with this? And he's like, what am I going to say? Like, I forgot to, you know, it's like, I forgot to lock my car and you just kind of swooped in there. And, but it, man, it was, if like you said, it's a will they, won't they, the whole ride.
Because I think there's some interesting spots where Will does come off kind of, I guess, jealous. I was thinking of a harsher word, but I'll just stick with jealous. Like, okay, dude, you're the one who left. You have no rights to her. But like in Haven, is that the name of it? Where Troy's, you know, husband or fiance shows up. And Troy's and Will's like, what? What's going? You can't be getting married. I'm like, hey,
completely,
buddy, you had your chance.
Flips out.
You had your chance. And then in The Child, the opener for season two, when like, you know, Troy's pregnant, and he's like, well, who's the father? And then he's like, And then he's a creepster when she's giving birth. He's like in the back of sick bay, like breathing heavy. I'm like, dude, can you give her some space? What the?
Okay, I can't defend Haven.
Just like at all.
He does seem well. I think I can. I can defend both of those instances. I can defend Haven and the child, and I think they're both out of protectiveness. So I think because Riker. Because obviously these two are best friends, no matter what. Like, even if you think the relationship's strange or whatever, they're clearly two people that care very much about each other. And in the Haven, he knows that this is going to make her unhappy. He knows this isn't what she wants, but she's willing to give up everything to be with this guy that she doesn't even know. And that's kind of a barbaric way of looking at things for them. So I can forgive it. I mean, he comes off strong in that episode, but I think his motivation is pure. And then in the other one, the child... yeah, I mean, well, that's natural. I mean, if you loved someone, clearly, maybe you weren't in a relationship, but you loved them, and all of a sudden they were pregnant, you might get a little defensive. But he was the one that was there, like you said. You said it was creepy, but I actually think it was kind of endearing that he was there. He was there for he made his presence known. He was going to be there for her.
I mean, Darren, you're married and have a child. I just think, and I don't know what the protocol is, you know, if you were in the hospital room, do you usually ask a woman giving labor if you can be in there, or do you just kind of sneak up? What's kind of the protocol there?
I think they prefer you to be the father of the child, or at least a direct family member. I could even see Uncle Odo showing up more than Riker. You know, obviously her mother would have, you know, I'm surprised she didn't make an appearance in that episode.
Took me a while to get what you're talking about.
It's okay.
There.
I know there's a lot of lag. I was going to say a little bit of lag there, but that's okay. But no,
I was going to say one moment that we didn't mention that is played for laughs out of Riker's jealousy that pops out into my mind is from The Nth Degree. When she's talking to everybody about Barclay and how he's so suave now, and well, he tried to make a pass at me, and then so they all walk out of the ready room,
and then it's like his face,
his face. It's so funny. I always remember that moment. I think it's hilarious. But
now one,
like, that's how they're measuring Barclay's intelligence, is how fast he's made a pass at Troy. She's like, well, it's the galactic standard.
Well, apparently she likes the guys that just barge into her quarters and start taking her hair, and I don't know, anyway. Well, one episode that, and I haven't seen it recently, so I'm going to have to rely on y'all. Okay, we're going to need a photon torpedo here. The one with Thomas Riker.
Oh, I don't remember the name.
Second Chances,
there you go.
Pa-ching! Pa-choo!
So, like, what, I mean, because that was sort of an episode that kind of encapsulates the Riker-Troy relationship, because, you know, you have, for those who don't remember, this is the one where there's a transporter accident, apparently several years ago, and they discovered that there was a copy made of William Riker, and so we call him Thomas Riker, because we need to figure out who's who. He's the one wearing yellow. And so Thomas Riker is like, oh, no, I'm still in love with Gianna, I never would leave her, and so there's sort of that rekindling of this Riker-Troy relationship, except it's with T. Riker, not W. Riker. And so I don't know if y'all remember that better than I do. What kind of was that like?
It's an interesting outlook, because the question it kind of poses and the direction it takes is, you know, if you were to meet your younger self or a younger version of your soulmate, like, would it still work? And that's ultimately, I think, why the relationship breaks down, because he's still the same person. He's still going to make the same choices. And I mean, if I were to meet, you know, my wife, you know, maybe 10 years of as if she was 10 years ago, you know, we were very different people. And it's like, I think part of that chemistry you get when you start to meet someone is where you both are in your journey. And Star Trek, you know, because it's Star Trek and we can do awesome things like copy and paste our number one. Would that make him number two?
One and a half.
I'm just 1.5. But because we can do that, we can explore that, obviously, aspect that would not happen in real life. But in that aspect, it really goes to show, I think it's reinforcing Riker's character even more than Thomas, because it's saying, look, he made these choices, but they were good choices. You know, they were difficult choices to make. And ultimately, Riker, in quotes, whether Thomas or Will, you know, puts his career before his relationship with Diana, ultimately. circumstances may be a little different around that, but that's the choice he makes. And then one goes off the deep end and joins the Marquis, but, you know.
Well, he had an identity crisis. So.
Well, we can clearly, there's no argument from anybody on this point that Will Riker is better than Thomas Riker, because if we remember.
Oh, by far.
Well, but I have scientific proof for this.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Important. My opinion apparently is
quantified.
No,
no, I was setting up for a joke. That's what it was. But my point was that Thomas spends an evening with Kira, while William spends an evening with the much superior Ro. So we know from that fact that William Riker is by far the best Riker, and it doesn't matter what you say. That's the end of the argument.
That is the definitive statement. I am 100% behind
that. So Daniel not only has a standard factor for measuring nacelles, he also has one for measuring Bajorans.
Measuring the beard.
For Bajorans. And so I don't know if it's the number of nose ridges or what it is, but maybe he'll let us know what it is one day. Well, you know, one thing, Daniel, that you have said throughout this thing about Riker Troy, you know, to me, they didn't act as much as, like, you know, ex-lovers or whatever. Just, they acted more like a congenial divorced couple. Because, I mean, they're still kissing all the time, but they're not together. It's like, you know, it's almost like, we were young, we got married, but, you know, it didn't work out, we divorced. But, hey, we're still friends. Because, I mean, it wasn't more like, I mean, I don't, they never really said how long their relationship was on Beta Zed. But enough for them to be Imzadi, I guess. But that was, you know, however long that takes.
We don't want to define it, so let's make up a Betazoid word to define it, but never quantify it.
Can we also just mention real quick how useful the fact that she could communicate telepathically with Will Riker would have been for the rest of the series, but they never use it again.
They never use it again, did they? Distress signal. I've been kidnapped by Romulans.
Please,
Will, can you get this?
Me. This is what's going on. This, yeah.
Little Professor X moment, you know, put her hand to her head and it's like,
yeah, exactly.
Captain Picard's like, wait, I hear Troy for some reason. What's going on?
It's like, I know. I always hear her too. It's like, she never stops talking. Always in the, you mean, she's in trouble. Okay. They have a cardboard cutout of her they put in that chair, you know, whenever she's not around.
All right, well, let's tie up the bow here. So, in Generations and in First Contact, we really don't get, you know, any Troy Riker stuff. But at Insurrection,
they're too busy kicking butt, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And taking names.
Or crying or crashing the ship. Yeah. But in Insurrection, it's interesting y'all said that it was all before the beard, because all it takes is for Will to shave off the beard again and suddenly, bam, Riker Troy is 100 miles an hour again.
The beard is his relationship kryptonite.
Yeah, so it's interesting, you know, Insurrection, where they are going, you know, what you were saying, Darren, go 10 years ago. You know, Insurrection, that's what they do, that the magical young rays, whatever you call it, you know, made them go back in time, and, you know, Will feeling frisky again, and you know, hey, you know, Counselor Troy, do you think two people can go back in time and, you know, fix a mistake? Oh, well,
she's like, you know how many times we've gone back in time? Time's Arrow. This happens like every other week. This is not special. I need a new pickup line, Will Riker.
Well, she was young enough to believe it's only in the ship Enterprise.
That wasn't even the first time they went back in time on the E.
Month ago, we went back to Earth, you know, 2063. Don't you remember that?
But apparently that's all it takes to get them in the bath together and shaving off and all that stuff. And
that gives us the great line, smooth as an android's bottom, Data?
No.
He's like, no.
Which we should be punished for not bringing that up on our Data episode. So.
We'll have to reboot that. So, but I think in some ways it is a logical progression from Insurrection into Nemesis, because you have the rekindling in Insurrection, and then Nemesis leads into they're getting married, which I think is funny. And I know we'll do a Riker episode, I'm sure, sometime in the future. But, you know, the whole thing about why Will couldn't be with Deanna is because of his career. Well, guess what? You're being promoted. Oh, okay, I can settle down now. It's fine. You know, I got the four pips. I'm ready to settle down now. It wasn't until then that I could get stay with one woman.
So instead of rings, do they use that last pip on his collar as the signal of their eternal love and devotion together?
That was his career goal, though. I buy that. That makes sense. He wanted to be captain. Once he got captain, he's like, now I can have it all.
He's like the official high school jock. I got to get the girl and the car.
Wait, so is this why he kept turning down promotions? He's like, I told Deanna I wouldn't marry her unless I got that fourth pip, but I'm not ready, man. There's too many women out there. There's even ones without gender. I want to wait.
Oh, man.
And in Insurrection, he learned how old he was, you know, so he was like, you know what, I guess I'm not the Risa. You know,
he got an email from Thomas, and Thomas said, hey, buddy, you know, I'm you and you're me. You better lock this down because time keeps moving forward. It's the fire in which we burn, someone told me.
Oh, well. So yeah, so were you all kind of satisfied that they got married? Did you think that was a good kind of ending there for Troy Riker?
Yeah. I mean, I always thought they'd end up together.
That's what Will said in All Good Things.
Although, you know, typical censors, you know, we can't show the wedding, but we can show the reception because you know, we all know what. Although you'd think, okay, if you were reading a script and it said the next Star Trek movie is going to start out with a wedding. I mean, that sounds a little Star Wars episode 2. So. We're going to go in a Senate chamber, you know. But the way, oh, it's much, much more in episode 2. But the way they pulled it out and the way, you know, you get these great lines beforehand about Picard going to the gym and Mr. Troy, and they owned it in such a Star Trek way that it worked. It really did. And it basically, because like we've talked before when we talked about Picard, is Nemesis is all about family and the changes that happen in family, and marriage is a very big part of that. So no, I was satisfied with how they tied up the relationship.
All right. Well, I think we've talked to them a good amount, so we're going to move on to our second romance. So this relationship wasn't introduced until the entire second episode of Next Generation, when one character unzipped her uniform a little bit, while the other character clicked his heels and made some weird horse noises.
Now, Beverly.
We're talking, of course, about the other will they, won't they of the Next Generation, Beverly Crusher and Jean-Luc Picard. And to me, they kind of had three phases of the relationship. One we kind of learned about was sort of the pre-Enterprise relationship. The second one was
where Picard had slightly more hair.
Exactly.
Slightly.
The second phase was kind of during most of the run of the show. And the third phase, and you can agree or disagree, the third phase kind of was after Attached episode. So the first phase, which we really didn't learn about until Attached, but very quickly. So obviously Beverly was married to Jack Crusher, Jean-Luc's, you know, best friend or good friend at the time on the Stargazer. You know, we've never learned exactly what the details were. Was he captain? Was he just the commanding officer? You know, whatever. But somehow, you know, Jack died. But we learned in Attached that even before they got married, that Jean-Luc kind of had a crush on Beverly. And so that...
Well, we do know that Picard was directly involved in the death of Jack. That a decision...
Well, he didn't shoot him.
Made... Well, no. But he wasn't found having the gun. But,
yes.
But he was...
The commanding officer, yeah.
Yeah, a choice he made indirectly or directly led to Jack's death.
Right. So that was sort of the pre-relationship that Jean-Luc had feelings about Beverly, and we don't know if she felt anything in return, but anyway. But that, you know, his best friend married Beverly, so hey, hands off, you know, the girl. And so then you have that whole relationship. So that's sort of the pre-Enterprise. So now we have, you know, here on the Enterprise during Next Generation, we have the whole Naked Now second, you know, episode where they're kind of is literally what he says. So
that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So from
that's a direct block quote.
It is. So from first season to Attached, which is I think sixth or seventh season. What did y'all think of Beverly and Jean-Luc?
I think it was a fun relationship because even if you took aside the physical attraction, you could tell like they had just, again, they were old friends, but in a much different way than Troy and Riker. And you could tell they had known each other for a long time, and they, you know, they enjoyed having, you know, breakfast together. And, you know, they're also in some ways on the same level as far as, you know, not rank per se, but in authority in many ways. And that set her up more as the counterpart, I think, to Picard. Whereas, I mean, not to compare everything to Troy Riker, but, you know,
Triker.
I don't really see to Triker. I don't see you know, Troy being the counterpart to Riker in the same way. So, where was I going with this? But, you know, with between Picard and Beverly, I think it was smart that they kind of put it out there in the beginning, because it left the writers with a lot of opportunity to draw that along. And it, I think, even more so than Attached, I think a more important episode was Lessons, because that's really the most serious we ever see Picard with a woman, and it's not Beverly. It's Commander Darren. And
Commander Darren, look what you did there.
I wonder why he remembers that name so well.
I may or may not have clipped all of the sound effects of the Enterprise crew talking to Commander Darren. I may or may not have done that, but no, and that's a great episode too, because it, you know, shows really that's the burden of command, is you really have to set yourself apart. And in that regard, I think, you know, his relationship with Beverly, I think because they were friends, he just never let himself cross that line until the end, when, you know, till we get, he's finally starting to cross that line in Attached. And that's what makes that such a pivotal spot in their relationship.
Well, apparently he has a thing for women in blue. So what do you got about this, Daniel?
Attached is an interesting episode. It's actually one of the episodes that I remember seeing previews for. It's definitely one of the few, the episodes I remember seeing first run, like when it first showed. And like, oh boy, they can only move 5 feet from each other, whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's been a little while since I've seen the episode, but the whole relationship is interesting. And I actually like that it's much more subdued and much more subtle than the Triker. Oh my God.
Yeah. Triker relationship. All right. If you're listening now, tweet hashtag Triker.
It's a thing now. I can't say it. Troy Riker. But, Troy and Riker are definitely in the forefront. And then Beverly and Jean-Luc have a much more push to the back kind of relationship, and I like that, and I appreciate it. And I never felt the need that they had to complete that like the same way. Like, I never felt that they. I liked in All Good Things how they got married and divorced. I thought that was great. I thought that was like, it was
like, hey, you guys wanted to know what would happen here. This is what would have happened.
Leave us alone, fans. All right, you happy? You happy?
But I think that's so cool. Like, I think that shows like a level of character understanding. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it seems great at this time, and maybe they do have real feelings for each other, but it doesn't mean it'll always work out. And I think it's really smart. And it also shows, again, like, he goes on to that bridge of the ship. And of course, this is all not real, but whatever. But he goes on to the bridge of the ship, and she's still willing to put her career on the line for him, so even after they got divorced.
So you kept the name, eh?
Well, everyone knows the Picard maneuver, and you're so famous, so I'd opened a lot of doors at Starfleet Medical where no one likes me.
Well, I always enjoyed the running gag of, I don't know how many episodes it was in, but I think the first one, don't quote me, I think the first one is in The High Ground, where the trope is there's some situation, Beverly comes to see Jean-Luc and says, Jean-Luc, There's something I want to tell you. And then beep, beep, beep. You know, so got to call. Got to go. Got to answer something. And I think that happens probably three or four times throughout the series. And I think that's starting to be a joke after a while. He's programmed Data
that if ever that line is spoken in such a manner, he, you know, through his Data Wi-Fi that he should have, he activates the communication system to get Picard out of a jam. Because, you know, Data's Picard's wingman. Or wing android, I should say.
Well, what do you think of how they handle each other's romances? And I'm actually going to pull an episode, which I know I almost have an informal rule not to talk about, Sub Rosa, because there you have, you know, Beverly under the influence of the candle, and she's like, I'm going to leave the Enterprise because I've fallen in love, and Picard's like in this weird point of like, well, my CMO and the girl I kind of like wants to leave because she's fallen in love, and is that awkward for him, or? I mean, how do you think they handle each other's relationships?
She gets along great with Vosh.
You mean Dr. Beverly Crusher?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's this thing I think that Star Trek does pretty well, is it at least The Next Generation, a lot of times it shows a very mature attitude about relationships. Like, generally speaking, I mean, you can tell if somebody's obviously they'll throw it in there if they're supposed to be a little jealous or whatever, but they never become petty about it. And they're always definitely like their first priority is as long as they're happy, as long as these people are being taken care of. And I really appreciate that. I think it's very smart. I think it's very Star Trek kind of an attitude to have. So I do like that.
I mean, we can go ahead and say it. There's very much an open sexuality in the 24th century. I mean, you know, hey, you're sleeping with whoever, whatever. No one cares. So, I mean, it's interesting, but I mean, that's out there. I mean, I feel like that is out there. You know, they just do. It's sort of Friends in the 24th century. You know, everyone's just sleeping around with everyone, and you know,
Enterprise. So now somebody has to take that theme song and put it over the next generation.
Was just thinking that would be hilarious.
Well, Tryker is clearly Rachel.
Oh,
Roth.
Yeah. Oh yeah, big time. So then, who would Picard and Beverly be? Would they be maybe Chandler and Monica? They would have to be, right? I guess.
And who's the monkey? Is that Data? I don't know.
I think we're going down a dark, dark place.
Well, I thought one interesting, and I was talking to y'all about this in Deck 7, about what this episode, Allegiance, which is a very earlier episode than I thought it was, where Beverly gets a confusing experience. I didn't think of my synonym. And she has that copy of Picard, who's that alien copy of Picard, who invites her to dinner and have a dance. And maybe we should explore these feelings, Beverly. I don't know. No, you're right. Bye. See you later. And she's like, what the heck? And apparently that's what causes her to be like, I think that's an alien. That's totally
mutiny. Mutiny. Yeah, let's
do it. You broke my heart, Andrew. I will relieve you of your command.
And then you have that, because this is like a third season. That's what y'all were telling me, right? Third season episode, Allegiance. And so you have that odd ending scene where like Picard says, Riker, like, so anything go on? And, you know, and Riker's like, well, you know, I knew something was up. I don't think you're that good of a singer. And Picard's like, well, oh, that's weird. And then Beverly just walks in, doesn't say a word, sits down, smiles. He looks at her, looks away, looks at her again, confusingly. She's like, smile, smile, smile.
And you almost expect that, like, TOS end of episode music, kind of, you know what I mean, where it's like,
yeah. Sorry, Standard Orbit guys.
Hey, it's we're just talking about our dad, you know. That's cool.
Dad.
So just you, did you think that Picard Crusher was distracting, or were you all cheering for them to get together, or were you like, you know, whatever happens, cool? I mean, were you hoping at Nemesis that Picard would be so overwhelmed during the Riker-Troy wedding, he'd be like, Beverly, make me the happiest captain in the world and say yes?
I find Picard, I think of him as a loner in my head. And so it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me for him to have these relationships that mean a great deal to him, but they never, they can't come to fruition. They can't make it the whole way. It's just he's too much of that person. He's too strong of a personality. He's too principled and disciplined. He will not compromise on anything. It makes total sense for him to be kind of a just a friends guy. So I was never pining for them to get married or anything like that.
Well, if you look at how Thomas Riker was the quintessential example of how Riker would always make the same choice to choose his career. Look at the Nexus with Picard. I mean, supposedly in the Nexus, Picard is that's his happiest he'll ever be. He has his family, he has everything, and yet he still chooses his duty and to go back to his ship. And it's like, that is probably what broke him up with Beverly, because there would have been a time when he had to make a choice, and men like him and Riker, often they choose the job. They choose the uniform.
Okay, random caveat with generations. One note, A, in the Nexus, you'll notice he's not with Beverly. Two, the woman that he is with in the Nexus is the same person who was a crewman in The Loss. Deanna was counseling that woman whose husband died under mysterious circumstances. And wow. Now that we've seen Picard wanting him her as the wife in the Nexus, I think those mysterious circumstances may have been explained.
I'm surprised you hadn't picked up on that conspiracy, Daniel.
Well, no, okay, so we can and cut this out if this isn't true, but I remember hearing that there was an attempt or there was an idea to put Beverly as that person. Like, the idea was that Beverly was going to be
that makes the most sense. Nexus.
But I don't remember exactly the reasoning why they didn't do it, but there was that idea.
And would it just been a bunch of little Wesleys walking around?
Oh, gosh.
The Travelers just, like, hanging out behind the Christmas tree, just, like, creepily staring at them.
The drunk uncle.
Yeah, I have to rest. I need to rest. So the drunk
you have
uncle.
To rest because if you drink those three whiskeys. But I mean, you know, it was, I guess, in some ways, maybe disappointing. I mean, I'm not saying they had to be married, but they did kind of ignore them in the movies. I mean, other, like we said, generous, you know, nothing in First Contact, nothing in Insurrection, except, you know, Bev knowing his collar size and saying he was quite the dancer, and that was about it. Of course, I think they kind of forgot about Bev.
She never said that about Data. That's kind of rude, even though she taught him how to dance.
Oh, well. All right. Well, that's Jean-Luc and Bev. So what we're going to go for our third topic is we're kind of going to do some honorable mentions here. So we're going to basically do some quickie relationships, if you will. So the first one I'm going to start with is one that Darren's kind of talked about, but Worf-Troi.
Right.
So this was... Well, yeah. Well, that also works with Riker Troy. You go Roy. Anyway, Torf? I don't know.
Torf. It's Torf. That's what it is now.
Hashtag Torf.
So y'all may want to correct me, but I feel like this has almost started season six-ish. How early?
Nope.
It was Parallels.
Wasn't it like the end of like the third, fourth, last episode that they?
No,
out?
No,
like,
because I think the genesis here was
Parallels
always
when it started.
Was when with the Alexander Deanna relationship? Oh, okay. Yeah, because I think that's kind of
that's true.
I mean, because I know a lot of fans like what Darren said, like, oh, it doesn't make sense. But I'm like, there were seeds there. It's not like it came out of blue. It wasn't like Chakotay 7. You know, there was something there of
sorry to the journey.
No, I'm not. They're not either. And so. You know, you had that whole Sochim, you know, of Deanna becoming kind of the mother.
She'd be my mother-in-law.
Oh, that was great. That was wonderful.
Right. And so you had that relationship kind of there. I mean, it wasn't romance, but there was something there. A Worf-Troi connection was being made. But then they kind of explored that and kind of then the parallels. You had Worf going to the alternate realities, and in some of those realities, he and Troi are married. I know Daniel's a fan of Parallels because in some of those realities, Alexander didn't exist. And so, you know, and then you kind of flash forward to All Good Things when they're at, you know, that's like the first date, I guess, is All Good Things and they're making out. And you know, I don't remember having a problem with it as much as everyone else did. I mean, you know, I'm glad they didn't like get married, but you know, I think it's interesting in All Good Things because you have that as almost this moment, right? That Worf and Troi, you know, hey, we can have a relationship. And what does this mean with Riker? And then you flash forward, and everyone hates each other. Deanna's dead, and what does that mean? And Riker and Worf hate each other, and all this stuff. But then, at, like, end of the episode, we go into the movies. Never talk about it again. You know, generations. You don't have any like awkward breakup between Worf and Deanna. And in First Contact, Deanna's not like, hey, congratulations, I'm getting married. And in Nemesis, no one's like, hey, sorry about the dead wife, Worf. You know, it just, there's nothing like that.
Because well, he would have put his fist through their face if he had.
But anyway, but I mean, you know, I didn't hate it. I mean, again, there wasn't much to it. But to me, it made logical sense with the whole, I mean, because she was there for Worf, you know, when he broke his... spine, whatever it was. I mean, she, you know, counselor role, I know, but to me, it wasn't out of the blue. So, like, I didn't hate it. What were your all quick thoughts about Worf-Troi?
I just want to, real quick, and I'll let you go, Darren, after this, but I just want to mention that the reason that nobody mentions Jadzia's death in Nemesis is because nobody from the Enterprise was apparently invited to the wedding. So they were like, well, fine, you want to be a jerk?
That's they shun, so, shun
anyways,
him.
Anyways, go ahead, Darren, you can go ahead.
F us Worf? No, F you Worf.
Although I just have to say, I would have loved Jessia to meet Troi at Quark's and to have a conversation. Oh, to be a fly on that wall, that would be a great scene.
You're right. He does like to be bitten right there.
Oh. But yeah, no, I think it was a good seed in Parallels. Like you said, there were seeds before, but Parallels is really where the writers were like, oh, hey, this could actually work. And that's when, you know, the Triker train started to head into Torf territory. But no, it was fun. And you could tell the writers were just, you know, having some license and, you know, and it was very well played by Michael Dorn. I think he did a better job wooing her than we ever saw Riker did.
I did love that little cute little scene of like, oh, so should we invite Will to our next date? No. I mean, yes, with the... That is not what I... Ugh. So, okay, well, that's my little contribution. So, Darren, what is your relationship here?
My quick shot relationship is that wonderful time between Geordi LaForge and holographic, then real, Leia Brahms. Leia Brahms is a great character. She was introduced in The Booby Trap, where the Enterprise is getting sucked, you know, power away. And so Geordi, like many times in Voyager, they're like, hey, we could make a fully functioning hologram just by downloading someone's, you know, psych profile and their Wikipedia page into a body. And boom, presto, interactive hologram, you know. And he falls in love and, you know, like this cute little boy. And it is all great. And then in a masterstroke, the writers bring her back, you know, in the flesh, the next season, and she's married. And it's so great because you just have this great reveal where Geordi's like, oh my gosh, the computer didn't tell me you were married. And it's like, that's your line to try to patch this up? The computer didn't? When I was Facebook stalking you, I forgot to check your relationship status, you know, in Galaxy's
Child. Which is always
Child.
Right there on the top.
Leah finds the hologram and is like, oh, the computer didn't tell me you were a psycho stalker either. So,
let's not forget, though, that just like every other relationship we've talked about so far, in all good things, we do hear about Geordi and Leia Brahms.
Actually, it goes even farther than that. Canon books, whatever. But there's a great book, which I really enjoyed, that is set, obviously, well after that. And it's called Indistinguishable from Magic. And it's from the line, you know, any technology advanced enough is indistinguishable from magic. And they are reunited. Captain LaForge is on the USS Challenger, which I think is another Galaxy class ship, and they basically fall in love. And I think at this time, in other series of books, I think her husband had died, but they fall in love and they start a relationship. Yeah,
how
very convenient,
convenient.
But by a warp reactor breach, nonetheless. No, I'm just kidding.
did he do a barrel roll in time?
That door went up instead of down, and he just slammed into it. But no, and you know, I really enjoyed how the author wrote their relationship, because it was really the relationship we all wanted to see. We wanted to see these two get together because they seemed to fit so well. The thing I liked best about the Geordi, you know, Leia relationship wasn't even the relationship itself. It was the fact that the writers were able to include that when, as a friend, Geordi's trying to talk to Reg and be like, hey, I fell in love on the holodeck too. Like, you know, it happens. Like, you know, very rarely in episodic television do characters reference other episodes, and that was a great way to tie that thread together of, oh yeah, I mean, that's a really nice way of saying you went off the deep end on the holodeck at Utopia Planitia. But you know, it's just a fun relationship.
So do you think he ever called, you know, Barclay back? Because, you know, the first time was like, Reg, you know, I fell in love in the holodeck, but I knew when it was time to turn it off, and that's what you need to do, because it's never going to come up again. And then, like, after he like meets Lee in real life, so Reg, I was wrong.
Yeah, actually, when you meet the real version of the holodeck character, you woo them and you marry them. That is the lesson. More you know.
So it's not crazy that you want to meet the real Voyager people. All right, Daniel, you're clean up here. What's your relationship here?
So my relationship is actually probably the most well-established, well-defined relationship in all of Trek from the inception. Okay, that's a joke. It's not true. It's actually going to be Keiko and O'Brien, who we just hear about getting married.
I'm like, where is he going with this?
Is this Daniel's day?
It is the longest running relationship, I think, that we see. Yes, I'm going to go with that. It has to be. Well, no, I guess the
Data and Spot went for years and years. No,
certainly
no, I think
the,
you're right.
The,
I think
the,
it
probably
is
the most screen time dedicated to it, at least. I can say that. Which is probably, unlike most of these other relationships we've mentioned, is actually a terrible relationship, and like exactly what you don't want to have with a significant other is the relationship between Miles and Keiko. I mean, you know, we'll let the Deep Space Nine guys, the Orb guys,
they have names.
We'll let Chris and Matt rag on Keiko, or not, whatever they choose to do. But we do get
She's no Nurse Ogawa.
She is no Nurse Ogawa. And imagine if we.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Anyways, we do get to see them married in Data's Day, which is a fantastic episode, amazing episode. I love that episode.
Her hat was amazing.
Not only that, but seriously though, I mean, it is. Even if it's an unhealthy relationship, we do get to see.
how are you defining that, by the way? Just
By TNG standards, it's like the textbook.
I know.
Well, you know, I mean, O'Brien's attracted to 12-year-old Keiko at one point.
Miles Edward O'Brien, I am still your wife.
O'Brien tries to take over the ship and kill his own child. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Although, I think the best episode of their relationship is in Deep Space Nine, where Keiko's taken over by, like, an evil, I think it's a pod wraith, and basically, you know, Miles goes all Mission Impossible and basically has to fool everyone to save his wife. And let's just say I'm sure she was very thankful after that encounter. But that was just a wonderful episode about marriage.
I don't know. It says the only married guy. So take that from what you will, folks.
But you know, again, this is the TNG podcast, obviously, so we're not going to go into the whole Deep Space Nine stuff, but they do have Worf, they have very interesting childbirthing experiences, right? Because Worf delivers their first child. You may now give birth, right? Which in that great scene, which is fantastic. But then in Deep Space Nine, they magically transport the baby from Keiko to
your favorite character
Kira. Oh my god, and that's like the worst ever. We're gonna let the Deep Space Nine guys do the Deep Space Nine thing, but it is interesting because we get to see them. We don't get to see them date because O'Brien's not an important enough character in TNG at that point to watch.
Wasn't he a lieutenant? Wink.
Well,
wink.
He was Lieutenant Chief.
Yes,
Ensign Man.
It's a very complicated ranking system.
Yes, it's like an accelerated program for unenlisted people, but it doesn't matter.
He goes around, and when people take off their pips when they resign, he scoops them up. He has a collection.
Does he put them all in a bottle?
Or he's written a special subroutine when he beams them in. Magically, a pip's missing, and it just appears later, and he's like, ha, ha.
So are you saying Transporter Room 3 is like the washer and dryer of Starfleet? Like, I had a pip a second ago. Oh, well.
No, hang on. I love this idea that every single time the situation gets really tense and someone is like, then I resign from Starfleet. He throws the pips on the table and they leave the room. O'Brien sneaks away from behind a potted plant, just grabs it and runs out the door. I think that's fantastic.
Like the scene in... well, there's that great scene in... Is it... it's Insurrection. When he does, but Picard does that, and I now picture like the camera lingering an extra second or two, and you just see like a fuzzy because he's blurry, like Miles just creeping on the edge of the table, like at table height, and he's just like,
guess who else sneaked away from Deep Space Nine?
He snatches it and then runs out the other door.
Yeah. You can see a shuttle going off in the distance, a runabout from now.
But anyways,
oh, a runabout.
Anyways.
That's canon.
It's official now. Anyways,
Miles and Keiko are the honeymooners of the next generation. You know, one of these days, Keiko. Keep talking, Miles.
Bam, boom, straight to the wormhole.
Uh-oh. I'm gonna say, I don't get the reference.
Oh, my.
Oh, geez. Don't do that. I thought something was wrong with your recording.
No.
All right, let's dumb it down for Daniel. They're the Flintstones of Next Generation.
Like the movie The Flintstones? Oh, my. Right? Is that what you're
talking about? No.
John Goodman, right? That's what you're talking about. Anyways, but I guess my point was Keiko and O'Brien, we get to see them get married, have two children really inappropriately and in unhealthy ways, and then get really miserable and grow old and move back to Earth together. So it's probably...
I think the only people who had children inappropriately together were Worf and Kalar. I believe Keiko and Miles had children in the normal manner.
I disagree because... Is it Kalos?
Yes, Worf did not have sex with Kalos. That would have been really weird.
Kalos was the although he was Kalos the Unforgettable.
Well, there's a reason he's called the Unforgettable, if you know what I mean.
Kalos is like the Klingon Jesus, right? That was the whole idea.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, my apologies. Don't take my
and also the shortest Klingon I've ever seen.
I was going to say that no, that was not it was inappropriate because Alexander was produced from it, but it was not inappropriate in the fact that Kalar is just a very attractive Klingon. So I can't blame Worf. That's all I had to say.
She's way more attractive than the ones we saw on, on Riker's exchange program.
That's true.
Yeah, well, because we know if Kalar had lived and she had walked in during All Good Things and saw Worf kissing Troi, she'd be like, get away from that pape.
Pape. Oh, I was going to say, imagine if Kalar...
I'm not talking about that.
All right. Okay, well, I think those are a lot of good choices, and we certainly encourage our listeners to let us know your favorite relationships and whether you agreed with us or not. But it's been fun talking about all the will they, won't theys, and should they or shouldn't they have of the Next Generation today. But this is just one of the many Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek.fm this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Kirk versus computers.
Like there was some kind of salesman going around selling this life-controlling model.
It's like the iMac, you know? Everyone had an iMac back in 1999 or whatever it was, right? The Bondi Blue Landrew.
Earl Grey.
Data.
I think the only other time we see Data in red is, I think, in one of the parallel jumps in Parallels.
Yeah. I think it's Future Imperfect, maybe.
With that funky combat.
Is Data in red kind of like the song Lady in Red?
Data in red.
The orb.
The Jordan prophecies.
Well, I was thinking that Horan was probably not so much a prophet as a Bajoran songwriter who just wrote really bad lyrics.
The Ready Room.
Wear the uniform.
Because, I mean, I didn't see Eddington feeling he was the bad guy in this.
Oh,
he
no.
was doing what he believed in.
Yeah.
Where I think Sisko seemed to me, you know, he definitely started to white whale on this.
To the journey!
Samantha and Naomi Wildman.
She acted like a normal kid, except extremely
yes.
smart.
Yes. Yeah, granted, even though she was incredibly bright, because all Trek kids are, they're extremely advanced in the 24th century, she wasn't annoying like Wesley.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The Black and Cushman interview.
Gene didn't really delve into anything with any depth. I think he played the cards very close to his vest. He knew what he wanted, and he made sure he got it. And that's why he rewrote writers, and that's even why he rewrote me.
Warp 5.
The Temporal Cold War.
But as you say, with Arch, or Future Guy, if we were to assume it's Archer, he's not just making, you know, changes on a small detail or trying to recapture. You know, in Anorax's case, it's getting his wife back.
Right.
He's looking to completely change the course of history on a much broader scale.
Trek News and Views.
The Data Network.
With the Data Network, I wanted something that the Star Trek fans had already there. They didn't need to do anything. They just had to come along and be the Trekkie selves.
Literary Treks.
Warren and Ivory.
Yeah, I thought that was great that they finally explained that question that you had, why there are no gateways within the Bajoran system, and that's not necessarily true, and that the fact is that the Iconians know the prophets.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the Daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. And if you want to contact any of us and share your thoughts, just go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there, and you can choose to send to the show and choose Earl Grey. That'll come to all three of us by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. All right, Darren, if someone wants some good marriage advice about how you can stay together and produce one child, hopefully not while a Klingon is delivering it, where can they reach you on the internet?
They can find me on Twitter at Dr. Sci-Fi and also on my website, which is drsci-fi.com, where the Dr. Sci-Fi show will be returning shortly after a brief hiatus.
All right. And Daniel, if any, ladies or other folks want to get in contact with you on the internet, where can they find you?
So if Ensign Rowe wanted to tweet me, be very simple. It would be 1UpDan. That is the number one, not the word.
Now, wasn't she Lieutenant Rowe by the end of that? You might want to keep up with that.
Well, she's Maquis Rowe, so they have a different, rank
that's
system.
Right, that's right.
All right.
She should have been Commander Rowe, but whatever.
Commander of your heart.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And I can be found on Twitter at NC Public Servant. That's NC like North Carolina, Public Servant. Don't forget to support our sponsor for this show, Zoe, the world's first personal voice companion. You can find out more about this Star Trek combadge-like device and support their Kickstarter campaign by visiting zoe.me/trekfm. That's xowi.me/trekfm. Remember to include the Trek FM portion of the URL when you visit so Zoe knows you heard it right here on Trek FM. Also, help us continue to bring Earl Grey to you each week by getting your alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Toba Ushi. You'll find them at trek.fm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each and every week. So thanks to everyone for today's show. I'm going to leave right now to start shopping early for Valentine's Day. Girls like Star Trek Blu-rays, right? Well, until next week, make it so.
Live long and prosper.
Engage.
Fire.